Hello, and welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Crystal. We're librarians at Nashville Public Library.
This podcast is where you can find reviews and recommendations of the best books, movies, and music available for checkout from the Popular Materials Department of the Nashville Public Library.
You can also learn about library programs such as concerts, film screenings, book clubs, author talks, and book signings.
We're a little late this month because we've been working on a big project. Actually, we were just waiting to see if that squirrel or rat or possum or whatever that thing is in Pennsylvania that's supposed to see its shadow or bite its handler or whatever it's supposed to do. I guess it did or saw what it was supposed to see because we've got six more weeks of winter. And this month we're going to discuss Winter's Bone by Daniel Woodrell. You may have heard of this book because it was made into a movie and critics liked the film just as much as the book. But today we're going to talk about the book, but most of us have seen the movie, so it'll probably bleed into the conversation too. Be forewarned that there will be some spoilers today, probably. A little spoilage. But just so you know, the premise, it's set in the Ozarks, like the really like backwoods hillbilly Ozarks. And Ree Dolly, our protagonist, is a teenage girl who takes care of her disabled mother and two siblings, and her father has disappeared and put their house up as bond. She has to find her father, like, to save the family. So that's the premise of the book. So a lot of people talk about Ree as this really strong, powerful character, and I was wondering if you felt that she was a good provider for the children or if she made the right choices about the family during the book.
One of the things that jumped out to me was how protective she was over her two younger brothers. She seemed to realize that because her dad was never around and her mom was pretty much useless as a parent, that she had to teach the kids. And so she would teach them how to hunt and how to cook. And she was teaching them these things because literally they could be in the spot that if they didn't know how, they could starve. And so it was just a very intense. It would help.
Well, I would like to add that I think that I just liked how much it was unquestioning on her part. Like, you know, she's, what, 16, 17, mm-hmm. kind of in that age range? And she's running this household. And you never hear her say, oh, I wish I could go to the mall, or oh, I wish I could just watch TV. I mean, she just does it. And she's almost happy about taking care of her, you know, her siblings and her mother and the household and the land. And she just, you know, is very strong and just, because she has to, she does.
In an interview with the author, he kept referring to her as someone with wide shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, the idea that you're saying it was kind of like raw or like immediate, there's most of us, I don't think, have to live that way or think about even living that way. Mm-hmm. Just like, well, you got to survive. So if she has to teach her like 10-year-old little brother how to shoot a squirrel to
and
eat
skin it. Skin it.
And skin it, right? Yeah. She's just going to have to do that, where most of us, I don't think, really have to do that. So just to play devil's advocate, what about the idea that maybe, you know, when it came up that she just should have sold the timber? Why doesn't she just, like, sell the timber and leave?
It wasn't done. I mean, it was just, that's, I mean, it was generations of not done. I don't know if it was her great-grandfather or her grandfather, I can't remember, that had purchased this land, and that's just...
Actually, I believe it's her mother's side of the family that owned that
right,
house.
Right, right. That was her mom.
Right,
was
right.
It, but was her mom's father, or was it her... Do you remember how many generations back it went?
I can't remember specifically,
yeah.
But...
But that whole family tradition is very strong in that right. part of the country, and so, you know, it's just not... I would have sold the timber personally, I think, and saved the house that way, but she just didn't. That just wasn't what you do.
Or another option, she could have went off and joined the military.
Yeah.
But
that's actually the one thing that she does kind of...
That she wishes.
Want to do.
At the beginning of the book, anyway, that she mm-hmm. wants to do is she kind of sees the military as a way out. You know, as a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe by the end she changes her mind.
I feel like her choice to join the military was taken away from her
mm-hmm.
because of the responsibility. You know, she knows that her dad's not going to come back. She knows that her mom's not going to get any better. And I just felt like she was there, you know, with the kids until they were probably out of high school. And then maybe, but it just seems like by that time, you know, you're talking almost another decade, it just seems like her chances would just be gone by then.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the things that we should say is that the moral values of the community that we're speaking about are actually kind of very different than mainstream values. their source of income is creating methamphetamines, you know, creating methamphetamines and selling them. So there's this, like, their moral code and ethical code is very different. So it seems like you felt that she should have got out of there no matter what because she's stuck. But by the end, if she chooses to stay, in one way, it seems like in a normal story anyway, it'd kind of be like that happy sort of Hallmark, I'm going to stay with my family kind of thing. But you also could look at it as that's just a bad choice because you're perpetuating the cycle.
It has my happily ever after.
So what do you think about the role that drugs play in the book?
Well, the Ozarks are a beautiful place to live, but a difficult place to make a living. I mean, there's not any opportunity, and I guess people turn to what they can do and make a quick buck. It's not right, but...
Well, there are a few other people, right? There's the sheriff, and there's the bail bondsman, right? Well, that's very interesting, too, because the characters are the sheriff and the bail bondsman, and they make their living sort of as parasites to... you know, the drug culture, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is this drug culture and it's enforceable. You know, the sheriff can have a job and the bail bondsman could have a job, at least within the microcosm of the book itself. So what do you think about the idea of, like, the family's really rigid moral code, though, how it's different? I mean, do you think that it's good or bad? Or
I think it's survival-based. I mean, I definitely think that, you know, that life is a hard life and they've evolved into this where they have figured out what works for them, and so that's the path they're going to choose.
And everyone is loyal to that code
yeah.
and lives by it to the fullest.
Or consequences occur.
Exactly.
So what about the gender roles? It seems like, you know, it's like the gender roles are very somewhat archaic, you know, compared to, like, the men are in charge and the women take care of the family, right? And there's definitely really specific spots where, you know, it's questioned whether women should be the people who are speaking, like asking the questions or being in charge. You think that they could just still, like, live separate from society and make and sell drugs without those really strict gender roles?
Well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned that because one of the resolutions towards the end of the book, the women are what make it happen. Like, the men just stand by and watch. And maybe it's because Reese, our main character, is a female, and so a female deals with female. But definitely the resolution comes about because of the women, not because of the men.
Yeah. I could see, too, like, why couldn't, like, the character of Thump Milton, who's sort of the biggest, meanest, baddest patriarchal drug dealer in the book, like, you could see him as a woman, right? Couldn't there be, like, you know, a matriarch in charge of, like, the drug clan?
Well, his wife was pretty scary.
Exactly.
She was.
Well, he never lifted a finger, too. Like, it's like actually like his wife did the work, you know, as far as the violence. And it seemed too like his wife, too, actually sort of, she's the one who's in a way like breaks the social code by hurting Ree more than she should have.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and so, like, they, in a way, they police themselves.
Which ends up working out for Ree's favor in the long run, but she had to go through some stuff to get there.
So another character that was sort of ambiguous was Uncle Teardrop. So do you think he was a positive or negative character?
Well, I think he starts out as a negative character, but then at the end redeems himself.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting him to suddenly become, dare I say, the loving uncle, but he did. And so he kind of endears himself to you a little bit towards the end.
Jessup's older brother? Is that?
You know, Jessup, I can't remember if he was older or younger.
I feel like he was the older brother, so that kind of...
I believe you're right.
Yeah, so he was kind of taking care of, you know, what his brother wasn't doing. And I liked Uncle Teardrop by the end. I mean, he kind of got there. He was scary at the front, mm-hmm. but...
I think he was far scarier than Thump Milton, who was supposed to be the baddest of the bad dudes. But we never meet him.
Full badness.
Just in the barn. He comes out in the,
yeah.
in the barn, that one scene.
Where, like, from the beginning, Teardrop is established as really, like, mm-hmm. volatile and violent.
Yeah,
and,
volatile is a good word.
You know, on meth. On a meth bender.
I had a feeling he had a good heart, though, because the scene when Ree went to talk to him first, Victoria, his girlfriend, was there. I thought to myself, he must be a deep down a good person, or Victoria would not be with him. I don't know.
And she came back too when they divorced and, like, remarried and then divorced.
Yeah.
And, so I mean, she's coming back around. So. Right.
So I had a feeling there was some goodness and love and loyalty for his family there.
I thought about, too, like the idea of in drug culture or like criminal culture, you always have to, you can't show weakness, you have to act tough. So even that initial scene whenever Ree goes to visit them to ask for help, to ask, you know, where's my father at? You know, he has, even if he really feels for her and cares for her and wants to take care of her, like he has to act very tough regardless. He also perhaps too has to establish himself as the patriarch in charge.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that he didn't do more to help Ree until she got herself in over her head. I mean, he kind of was like, okay, I'm in charge, and he, I think he gave her some money, and then was just like, you know, don't do anything. But he didn't do anything until he had to kind of help her.
So. Don't want to read too much into it, but I wonder about if he maybe thought his brother was still alive somewhere at first. Maybe.
He may have.
And, you know, I wonder at what point Ree thought her quest was in vain. There was a scene in the book I remember, I think it was when she and Megan went to Little Arthur's. I think she said, has somebody killed my dad and everybody knows this except me?
Yeah, I didn't think he was dead. I didn't until, I don't know, I still don't think he's dead. You know, I mean,
because
we didn't really get a strong resolution. We kind of got a side resolution to it, but.
After that same scene, Ree hears his car, like that she knows is his car. So, but we never find out who's driving the car.
So he may not have been, so.
So I guess.
Perhaps the killer.
I mean, in closing, like the big unresolved mystery of the book was who killed Jessup Ree's father. So, do we have any hunches?
I couldn't figure it out. And I mean, that's like my thing. And I watched the movie after I read the book, and I watched the movie specifically to see if I could figure out who it was. And I got nothing. I would guess it's in somebody in the Milton clan, in the Thump Milton clan, but that's all the farther that I got.
Well, they knew where the body was.
Yeah, that's, yeah, so, yeah.
They that's a know. Big spoiler.
Oh, I think it was Thump Milton. Whether he did it or not, he called out the hit.
To maintain that culture.
I'll go with Blonde Milton as the killer.
Interesting.
Because he had an affair with Ree's mother, and so maybe he was happy to take him out.
And get his son.
That's right, because he did want to take care of him. So.
Yeah. Good for thought.
Dun, dun, dun.
What do you think, Brian?
My hunch is a very character had a small role named Sleepy John, who was in the barn when Uncle Teardrop retrieves Ree after she's beaten the crap out of, because the bail bondsman keeps saying that the person that dropped off the money to let Jessup out of prison was the guy who looked like he was half asleep all the time, or he just got out of bed. And there was this character named Sleepy John who had this dazed look in his eye. And at the very, very end, when the bail bondsman comes and gives the money back to Ree, because she's proven that Jessup is dead, he goes, I don't know, some guy with sleepy eyes just dropped off this money. And then Teardrop says, I know who did it, and he leaves. And boy, I just ruined the book for you. So that was my hunch, and I thought of that kind of on the fly. And I wasn't going to talk about the movie, but I'm so bad. But I felt that they treated that totally differently in the movie. That was completely different treatment, you know, that scene. There is a character who I think is supposed to be Sleepy John, but he's never identified. They never talk about his face or his features, so. So I thought Winter's Bone was a really good book. It wasn't great, but I think if you wanted to read something a little different, a little shorter, I think that you would like it. If you like Cormac McCarthy, definitely.
I like the movie better. I say see the movie instead of reading the book. It's pretty powerful.
They're both good.
Yeah, read the book first, then see the
movie. Thank you, good point.
You've been listening to Nashville Public Library's Pop-Matic podcast. For more information, please visit www.library.nashville.org.
That's on the interwebs.
How can I close it, guys?
Like,
interesting.